Well, joining me now on our set, our military analyst, Dr. David McIntyre of the Answer Institute and a retired U.S. Army colonel who has been with us during much of this war and has helped us work our way through the military strategy, which has just been so important. Dr. McIntyre, thanks for being with us. The drive to Baghdad, both in terms of air and on the ground, how important is this symbolically? Does Baghdad, in effect, really count at this point?
That's a really good question. If we're not careful, we'll get carried away, focused on the wrong thing. The issue of this war is weapons of mass destruction and the man who's ordered their creation, Saddam Hussein, and the people who have constructed them, the weapons makers themselves. That's what this war is about. So it is possible that we will end up with United States soldiers inside Baghdad, but I'm not sure. If we could get Saddam, if we could get the weapons, if we could be sure we had the weapons manufacturers before they fled the country, then there might not even be a reason to go into Baghdad. The real focus right now is Saddam's military forces outside Baghdad, and that's really what we ought to keep our eye on.
Well, it is a fair point. I agree with you. It is a fair point to make that the U.S.-led coalition is not after the destruction of downtown Baghdad, but rather disarming Saddam Hussein. In our report, we mentioned the Northern Front has opened with 1,000 or so paratroopers.
Right.
How important is that, and what does it signal?
Northern Front is very important. Maybe you ought to go to the map just a minute,
and we'll take a look at the map.
Recap what's happened in the last day or so. We had, of course, U.S. forces, U.K. forces that started out down south and have seized the port areas down to the south. We had U.S. forces a little north of that. I'm sorry, let me undo that one. We had U.S. forces a little north of that that moved up through the center of that have moved up through the center of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, and then U.S. 3rd Infantry Division that's moved up along the side of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And then finally, we've had the 101st Airborne Division that's acted as a screen. Those are the helicopters off to the side also. So what you see is a collection of U.S. forces to the south of Baghdad. The Iraqi forces are arrayed around Baghdad, and they're going to be oriented in sort of a semicircle to the south. Now, what we saw earlier today with the 101st the units from the 173rd Airborne Brigade was that they landed far to the north and established an airhead. And a number of troops will come into that airhead with lighter vehicles, and they'll be able to form a force that can come to the south. It won't be as heavy as it would have been if we had had Turkey allow our forces in. Originally, we had planned to have 60,000 troops that were going to be in this northern area right here, so we would have Saddam in a vice. Instead, we have a very conventional fight south of Baghdad, and that's what we've seen shape up for the last couple of days.
How does that hamper us, Dr. McIntyre? There's a big difference between 62,000 troops and 1,000 paratroopers or so to the north.
Well, the 1,000 paratroopers will season airhead, and we'll be able to fly in using the C-17, a very capable aircraft on short runways, and they'll be able to fly in some armored vehicles, and we will pose a threat to Saddam in the north. We'll reinforce and reassure the Kurds in the north, and we'll perhaps reassure the Turks that there won't be an unsettled revolution in the north. But that's a far cry from the pressure that we had hoped to bring on Saddam if the Turks had opened that ground pathway from the north. So as a result, we're seeing something shape up much more like a conventional tank fight in the south. That's not the way this was planned. That's the way it's working out.
Let's talk big picture for a moment. The notion of shock and awe apparently has not shocked and awed the Iraqis at this point. Even U.S. officials are conceding that it's going to be a bit of a longer go. What is your view of all this, and what's gone well and perhaps not gone well for things?
Well, as we've discussed previously, there was really a division of opinion over the last 10 years in the American military, and there are a number of people that said as technology moves ahead, we will eventually build technology that so overwhelms an enemy that merely by showing up, they will be intimidated, see the inevitable, and surrender. And that's been a threat of American military thought, and I think that was dominant as this plan was put together. There's been another threat of military thought that said it's always better to modernize your equipment, to have the best trained, best equipped forces on the field, because you're liable to have to fight. Well, I think that second, the first one was hopeful, it didn't turn out, the second one's come to bear. What's gone well, what's gone not well, is that we have not had the Iraqi main guard lay down their arms as we had hoped. And I think the reason is because these are the people who are going to be called to account once the war is over. We've had much discussion of Saddam and rapes and murders and so forth. Somebody was doing those bad things. It's these people that won't surrender now. They know they're going to be held to account. What's gone well is the equipment and training on the U.S. side. We've spent a lot of time, invested a lot of money into simulators, into training in the United States. The troops are well prepared for this. They weathered a terrible sandstorm and continue to move forward. So on the basic tactical level, I think the U.S. forces are in good shape.
The American public has got to be ready, however, as the president has suggested, for a much longer battle here. There's no sense here in believing that this is going to be a one-week affair.
Yeah, absolutely. The president tried to say that from his very opening remarks. This may be take quite a while. It's interesting. I think one of the things that misled many people in the American public, interestingly enough, was technology and the media. The media was riding aboard the lead tanks. They broke through into the open desert, and it seemed as though there was nothing in front of them. Well, there wasn't until we ran into the enemy 300 miles later. And so in some respect, the immediacy of the event sort of misled us.
It is a fascinating example of how the media is showing us the war in one way, but in another way, maybe misleading, according to you.
What's really happening right now is really fascinating. What I'm seeing in American newsrooms is exactly the same confusion that really takes place in American tactical operations centers right down at the front line. You're now having the front line information fed to you right in your homes, and you're realizing how confusing war really is.
Dr. David McIntyre of the Answer Institute here in the Washington area, a retired Army colonel, showing us what he knows about the subject, and it is quite insightful. Thanks so much, Dr. McIntyre.
Glad to be